the real debate is productivity. Is do we create value? Because of course, like not being too willing to be philosophical, if we don't create value, we don't create an environment where people can be happier, work less, and have access to better lives overall. So it's just important to see whether we're going in the right direction in terms of productivity.
Wechselwillig, der Podcast zu den aktuellen Jobperlen der heißesten Digitalunternehmen. Mit Christian Lukas Elbert.
Christian Lukas Elbert.
Nice to meet you. A wonderful hello to Wechselwillig. I know it's difficult to pronounce for people who are not native German, but we will try later anyways and see how you're going to do. I have the pleasure to sit today with Ivan Maillard.
Wow, perfect.
I'm trying.
No, that's good.
The head of Continental Europe for Industrious. For some of the people in Europe, they don't know what Industrious is. For me, it's kind of a full circle moment. So I'm very much excited. For everybody who is watching, we have this little bee, when I'm not mistaken, in the background. And I have a lot of pictures with the bee in the background already in my camera roll from, 2018, 2019. So I'm very happy to deep dive on that topic. Hello, Ivan.
Hi, Christian.
How are you?
Couldn't be better.
Jet lagged?
No, for once, I don't have this excuse. It's just a beautiful day. And as predicted, the golden hour is showing up after cloudy, moody Berlin day.
There is
it's
no
coming.
Golden
I'm telling
hour.
You, it's coming.
There's a gold glimpse of a golden hour, but that's it.
You got it. I'm an optimistic.
Yeah, obviously. The color of Berlin is gray until May, and until then we won't see any sun. I am very happy that we are able to talk today. And it's also the second time that we are recording in English, so please bear with me. But my English is not perfect, but I'm trying to. But that is also like attracting maybe some internationals, what is very, very nice. But before we're going to dive into your background, tell us quickly, what is Industrious? Are you like producing honey, or what is it exactly with that bee?
That's funny you say that, because most people don't really connect with the meaning of the name. And I think it's totally right, because the power of the brand is just about the sound and the memories, the ideas that you put behind the brand. It doesn't need to make sense. But yes, the Industrious brand, there is this notion of hardworking, being diligent, showing up for others, and being this person who's going to lead an army of other bees towards achievement and success. So that's something that people don't really think about when they think about us. And this meaning is a secondary thing, I guess.
So it took me like 7 years to understand the meaning of it. There we go.
Yeah, and some people even internally, I think they don't think about it, and there might be some different theories about it. But no, I'm really, really happy about being here with you today. Thank you. I really appreciate, by the way, that it's only the second one in English. And I know that with the podcasting, doing it in another language is hard, because you want to relax on the way to work. You don't want to be focusing too much when you listen to podcasts. And when
we were in Berlin. So my mom is still like offended that she can't order her coffee in German. So I think for the international crowd, it's going to be just the right way.
Yeah, that's great. So yeah, let me tell you a few words about Industrious. So Industrious is a premium co-working and flex space platform. That means that we do co-working like it is publicly known, that is to say sharing larger pieces of commercial real estate among smaller players, and making sure that we add layer services so it becomes an experience rather than a simple space provision. But we do more things as well. We do something that we call tenant experience management, and which is one of the fastest growing product for us right now, which is about how to bring life to a building and commercial assets in times where it's become challenging to make people happy to come to those buildings.
Indeed.
And another vertical of what we do is what we call managed offices, which is about transforming real estate again into a commodity and a service that people can purchase under a subscription model. So if you're a large bank or any large corporate player, you want to outsource this work environment responsibility to someone like Industrious.
That means in the past, big companies were like renting a space, rebuilding them, furnishing it and everything, and taking care completely on their own, what they're not doing anymore to be more flexible.
They're still doing it. Don't get me wrong. I think there are still way too many people who do it. But yes, it's been the same way for decades. You kind of own the space, even if you don't own it, but you rent it such in the long term with such commitment that it's like owning it. You invest heavily in the way you build it. You invest heavily in the way you manage it and you maintain it. And for a lot of companies, it doesn't really make sense when you sell electronics or any other type of product. You shouldn't have like 5% of your companies focusing on this work environment and doing it actually not that good.
Welcome to a sharing community and sharing environment, economy, everything.
So that's interesting you say so, because actually we are so Industrious come from the minds of our two founders, so Jamie Hodari and Justin Stewart, who are actually among the kindest and smartest people I've worked with, and just saying that because it's very important to understand where we are today, not to be a good employee thanking my bosses, but it's really important to understand.
How much did they pay you for that?
and I think it's just been smart and kind and really well regarded in this industry. That's why we've been able to grow really well and have this success story and be where we are today. But they've seen the future of our industry maybe a bit earlier than most. And like the fight that everybody was, the battle that everybody was fighting during the last few years, which was about claiming that we need to share a space and it's all about sharing economy, wasting, stopping waste and being saving money. I think we went with a different ambition into this business. We invested very early in being very good at providing an office experience that can work for the majority of professionals out there, not for only a subcategory of tech entrepreneurs or only people who need to innovate very aggressively. We thought that would be a solution that could be suitable for the majority of the knowledge economy of the office workers at some point. And we built an experience that people choose to go to and they are very happy to use, and we've done it in a universal and scalable way.
So it used to be like only like freelancers or
marketing people, tech people,
and now everything, literally it could be everybody.
That was about flipping the narrative and not saying go in a co-working space if you can't afford a real office. It was about say, go to a co-working space if you want to focus on your work, if you want to meet good people, if you want to use
just being more flexible
and leave an experience which is richer than having your own office and one company culture only. So yeah, we flipped the script, and instead of saying it's only going to be about cost efficiency, which it can be, but doesn't have to be. Sometimes people want to spend more in a flex solution because they just want the best experience money can buy. But we decided that we would focus on the experience, and at some point, the winners in this industry would be the people who can deliver the best experience consistently across the globe. So that's really a different direction from the sharing economy thing that's, that we decided to go for.
I used to work for a corporate, mm-hmm. and when I just remember, and it was like a big corporate, a non-corporate, and they had offices that were considered modern and future-driven. Compared to that, it was a shithole. Like, please throw in your coin for your coffee for 22 cents, and it's going to be a disgusting coffee. the food was good. It was decent, but that was actually the entire experience. Like the coffee machine, what you had to pay for and charge the card was the experience, and that was it. And here it's completely different. What is quite interesting, because I used to work in an industrious already in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
As most of our listeners know, sounds so horrible to say, I used to work for a co-living provider. And on my very first day, I had to go to Chicago. And it was quite fun because there was a huge building what we were developing. On the third and fourth floor, there was industrious. And I thought, oh, that's a co-working space. Nice. I have the fucking space to work in the same building I'm going to live. So I'm never going to see the outside of the city. And then fifth until 12th floor with rooftop pool and everything used to be like the co-living. So that's where I lived.
Nice.
And I took the elevator down every day to industrious. And then the elevator opened up and I was like, oh, that's not an office. That's actually quite nice. But like we had bagels in the morning. There was amazing coffee. They had a kombucha fountain. What was like nobody in Europe by then was like into kombucha, but it was amazing. And there was like on the 5th of May, there was like Cinco de Mayo, there was like margaritas. And I even have a video, maybe you can like implement it later. And they had like a wagon and it was they would did gin tonics at 4 or 5. And they were like from office to office. And at 2 were like snack hour and everybody was running for the snack. So the entire experience from the office manager and the community managers was amazing. I met so many nice people there. But it was really, really nice and I'm still in touch with them. Also, we had another office in New York. What was as nice as it was, just way smaller, but everything in New York is what is completely normal. But it turned out that there were a few times, 3-4 days in a row where I didn't really leave the house because I had everything and I really had the best experience. And I mean, that's the best case, more difficult for my health, but also the gym was in the building. So,
right.
And I never forget because right in front of the house, there was a salami factory.
Mm-hmm.
So every time they were like cooking the sausages, there was like the wind of the salami also throwing. It's like a key memory. I have like the industrious visuals and then the smells from outside. It's completely wild. But it's even nicer to see that now industrious is also touched already ground in Europe, Germany. And we are right now here in Indy by Industrious in Berlin in the Atrium Towers. We were supposed to watch the Golden Hours, what turned out like mediocre.
It's coming, it's coming. But I see it. It's getting more and more real by the minutes.
But this is also only one of your first locations and destinations. You're soon about to open like Industrious.
Yeah.
When is this going to happen?
So I love the story that you just said. It makes me so happy. That's really why we
you
do
can
that.
Hire me as your brand ambassador?
I was literally thinking about that. Like it's so good. That's exactly why we play this game, is to create those experiences that people can remember while long after where they experience those. And all those moments, like it's just an example. I didn't even have to give it. This community manager that we call now member experience manager, it's experience is the name of the game. They all are empowered by a lot of flexibility, and they can really use some budgets the way they want. But there is a very specific frame in training and culture that we deliver to them, and we have thousands of stories like that. And one of the key thing for the business is that very early we understood it would be about the quality of our product and the quality of the experience we can deliver. So we implemented the experience quality tracking system very early with the NPS, the Net Promoter Score, which is really the most important metric to us to this day. It's really what define our next quarter business strategy. Is the NPS is good enough, and are we still making sure that people are going to be there in a few months' time? Because if we don't deliver, that's exactly the risk of our industry and why it was not making full sense on the former leasing business model, is that people won't be with us in 12 months' time. Like, we have to commit and deliver results on commercial real estate standards with the asset owner on multiple years, But let's be real. And that's the beauty of it. Our clients can judge us like every month. They can challenge the quality of our services. So
I was never judging you.
You should.
I really have to say, because I was looking for an office like 1 year ago in Berlin, and I had like one coworker, and he was like doing research.
Yeah.
And every time when he was like coming up with some offices, and they looked like offices, even if they were like shared desk concepts and whatsoever, yeah. I sent him at some point like pictures from Industrious Chicago, and I was like, nope, that's what I'm looking for. So even years later, you really set a standard, yeah. where I was like, I was really willing to pay more only for that experience, because it's such a game changer if you really like to go into the office and you're just not going to a desk.
Yeah.
So it's like, and especially like even like for smaller people, like I know that you're doing like also entire like big companies, mm-hmm. but also like for people who are like individuals, you have a feeling of belonging somewhere.
That's really what we are thriving for. Like there is clear studies that show that people can do very, very different types of work and with a very changing level of quality based on the place that they work from. It's well known. Like, and we've seen that during the pandemic, a lot of people were completely fine by staying at home for months, and some people were really going crazy because they just were craving for social interactions. But we should be wrong to think that everybody's craving for social interactions. We have a lot of our members who want to have psychological safety. So they want to come to an environment where they feel respected, they feel recognized, and they don't want a party to be thrown every single day and have a place where they can connect after hours for drinks and all. So it's really the cliche of the after hours and the working community. But most of our members, they want a nice, consistent experience where, yeah, they feel like people know their name. They know exactly if they take oat milk or regular milk in their coffee. And
so my community manager was Megan by then.
Yeah.
Hi, Megan. I remember you. Hope you remember me as well. But what you just mentioned, the pandemic. And what I actually saw is like one sentence, like the office is dead. Long live the office.
Yeah.
Because everybody thought, okay, with the pandemic, we're not going to need offices anymore. So everybody, like the big companies, they were reducing spaces because mm-hmm. they said, okay, we're not going to have like a desk per person. It's rather it's like a desk booking system whatsoever.
Yeah.
And now suddenly the trend is going back into, hey, we need you in the office because we see that the collaboration is yeah. beneficial to companies' output. And I think also like as an employer, it was you were considered very attractive mm-hmm. when you offered flexible working and whatsoever.
Yeah.
I think it's switching now that as an employer, you're not offering home office. It's more like you're offering a flexible solution. Mm-hmm. But now also it needs to be, let's say, as nice as possible
mm-hmm.
or as experience oriented as possible, because
yeah.
I really think that people would choose their employer by that fact.
Mm-hmm. The distributed work teams, I think, are here to stay. We've seen that multiple industries, multiple sectors were able to do just fine for a very prolonged period of time where people couldn't come to the office the way they wanted, or when people didn't want to come back to the office. And I think nobody can clearly say we've observed a decline in the way our economies behave, in the way our social services deliver for people. And we would know by now if it was important for most of value creative centric organization, if it would be important to come back to the office and spend time in the office. So I guess a lot of people are fighting for the return to the office, and is just not the real debate. The real debate is productivity. Is do we create value? Because of course, like not being too willing to be philosophical, if we don't create value, we don't create an environment where people can be happier, work less, and have access to better lives overall. So it's just important to see whether we're going in the right direction in terms of productivity.
That's true.
And whether people are going to be in the office full time or not, I think it's about giving control to organizations about how they want to manage their workforce, how they want people to feel happy and to feel committed to the goal of the organization. And if you want people to be productive, you set other timelines, targets, you give them crazy deadline and work, and you see if it's achieved within the conditions that has been set. But it's not really forcing them to come back to the office, I think.
I think it was very generalized. Employee wants to have remote work or wants to have home office. Mm-hmm. I think after a few years of experience, now we see it's something else with someone who just started their job and they're like, they need an identity. They need to like belonging to also an employer because they're like in an identity shaping era. But then also like people who are like 15 years in building up families, of course it gives them a little bit more freedom, but it's like the mix in between. The entire co-working topic is often overshadowed or clouded with the wonderful We Crashed.
We what?
The story from WeWork.
Yeah.
With the wonderful podcast, was called by then We Crashed, but it was more like the personal hype about Adam. Do you think co-working was affected by that business strategy in some way, or didn't matter?
I think it was impacting more positively than negatively. It's been really some real promotion of this industry, and yeah, they put co-working on the map. And there's been some amazing marketing efforts and activation for people to just hear about this solution and know what is co-working about. So I think this credit is something that needs to be recognized and not forgotten. It's been somehow an accelerator for our industry, and yeah, there's been a lot of communications between our organizations. It's not because we're competitors that we don't exchange ideas and good practices. And I know for a fact there are a lot of really skilled, smart people in WeWork as well. A lot of those people are with industry now as well. So that's why I can tell it.
Look at the shade.
And I think, yeah, it's been overall a positive contribution. For Industrious, it's also been somehow indirectly a positive contribution, what happened more recently with Chapter 11 for WeWork, because...
For everybody who doesn't know, Chapter 11 is the bankruptcy in the US.
So it's proven a point that we've tried to make for a long time. So the first thing I told you before is that we were really fighting to have the best NPS score and maintaining above 80, which is really 50% above the benchmark in this industry. The second thing is that we pivoted our business model. Like 7-8 years ago, one of the best decisions for the business that we made was to stop exposing ourselves with very high fixed rents when what we sell is very volatile. And as I mentioned earlier, our members could decide that for some reason they want to spend much less or much more. We don't know yet, but it can go up and down. And it doesn't make a lot of economical sense to be stuck at a fixed level. At some point, a weak crash type of situation would happen. So 7 years ago, we decided to pivot to what we call a management agreement or any sort of incentives alignment between the asset owner, the operator, and most importantly, the end user. And we stopped signing leases and being exposed, and we wanted to shift to a more sustainable business model. WeWork proved that it was a great decision because at some point they felt just that they were stuck with very high level of fixed costs, having their rent representing 80% of their revenue. And the first downtime and really hard, slow period of market phase, you would have this situation where you can't just pay your invoices anymore and you have to close. So it's been helpful to prove that this industry needs to reinvent its business model, and we are operators, not tenants.
That's true. You talked about the NPS, what is measuring the satisfaction and the happiness level of your clients. And your promoting a certain vibe and flexibility and way of working in your places. How is it to work at Industrious now? I saw a lot of smiling faces here until now.
I've been working in multiple organizations, but I've been so impressed and proud when I joined Industrious, mostly because the cultural aspect is really the core priority. If you want to deliver a great work experience for a living, you know, make sure that you are capable of doing it first for your people. So the culture is really great in terms of you need to come from the right place in any business decision you make, making sure that this is going to be having a positive impact. You need to do it as a team and making sure that you don't work in silo and don't leverage this collective intelligence that we have. And you need to be brave in doing new things that can have a bigger impact for our members' experience. So I think, especially in our industry, that's what we needed. So we needed an eye-opener, painful story maybe like we were, but we needed also a very sophisticated and more academic type of organization to try to elevate a little bit the level of services and almost go pro in this industry. Like, it's been this reputation of working with startup and only with startup and doing things for just a short amount of time as a transition solution. We wanted to be on a product where large organization will use FlexSpace in the long run. And we wanted to align with the standards that those 500 Fortune companies have. So,
can you name one big company? What is like a review, or is it like undisclosed?
What do you mean? Sorry, a big company.
One of your clients.
I think, yeah.
References.
We have a lot of blue chip company and great long term partners. I guess our larger client is probably a bank, and the second one is one of the largest tech companies. So we are doing a lot of work with those two sectors. But I'll send you the brochure. We have all the names on it.
So we talked about
it. I don't like name dropping like that because everybody has beautiful names on their brochures. We have key agreements with very large occupiers, and we're really proud of that because that's really the way we design a business, the way where we can be an outsourcing solution that deliver consistently for those organizations. So
discretion is key. We talked a lot about Industrious and the co-working industry, but how the heck did you end up here?
After one accident followed by another accident followed by another accident. You know the story.
Oh, welcome to the classic career path.
No, I am. So I graduated in geopolitics. I wanted to work for the United Nations after school, which I started to do. And unfortunately, I needed to go on a more financial viable path rapidly. So realized that I had to go something a bit more money oriented rapidly, and that's when I got parachuted in the real estate industry. I joined in Paris in the early days, one of the pioneers. So you were talking about the OG of co-working space. Actually, my first gig in the service office industry was with an Australian company still active to this day called Surfcorp, and that's invented the virtual offices. So this concept of not occupying a space for real, using an address.
We're sticking with the OGs.
Yeah, that was something that started, I guess, in Sydney and then in Japan in 78.
Oh, wow.
We're not even talking about OGs anymore. Like, it was really a great piece of innovation back in the day. So I worked with them in Paris and then was doing quite well because I really was attracted by doing more than sharing spaces. I wanted to create a community, and it was already paying off. People really loved this kind of getting connected to other members and connected to a global network back in the days. It was totally fake. Like, people were super happy to know that we had a unit in World Trade Center and in Dubai or in Hong Kong to IFC. But to be honest, back in the days, in 2011, they would never travel. Like the reality of the business mobility was not what it is today. There would be less
on a certain level,
selling memberships on the hypothesis that people would travel and go around the world and use our prestigious addresses, but it was not the case. It's changed now, but that was just a marketing thing. So I've worked with Surfco for a few years, and I opened numerous units in Europe, in Middle East, and in Asia. And after many years opening many business centers, I met great potential partners and investors in Singapore and decided to try our own vision for co-working. So we started a co-working luxury positioned and hospitality-centric co-working called The Great Room in 2016 in Singapore. This is the moment where...
So you lived by then in Singapore?
Yeah. I went there to open another business center, my former employer. And I was pushed back to Middle East and I didn't want to go back because I asked my partners to follow. And the deal was that I was supposed to stay longer. So I said, screw that. I've been talking to those great... very ambitious Singaporean entrepreneurs and yeah, so let's do it. So it was, I remember, 18th of December 2015.
Oh wow, you know the date by like exactly.
I went back into the boardroom for General Assembly and I said, I think I'm out. And I called my former partners in Singapore and decided to...
Was it like a head decision or was it like a gut decision?
It was one of those decisions where you feel extremely good and you know that it's... Yeah, it was... Every signal was green and was going the right direction. There were very kind people and having great ambition. There was a bit of innovation. There was this concept of doing something really inspired from hotels. Maybe too much, and I'll come back to that. But there was, there was a new, exciting route for me and no regrets. So we've done multiple openings. We expanded rapidly to Bangkok, to Hong Kong, more recently to Sydney. And we met the Industrious team before the pandemic, said that we really liked each other and we would work together at some point. There was barely bigger than us.
That's the business tango.
And fast forward 4 years later in 2022, they were obviously so much more advanced in their vision of co-working and flex space that they had grown extremely rapidly during the pandemic. And they acquired The Great Room in May 2022 after a major investment done by CBRE. It was very important for... a player like Industrious, who's structured to be scaling up, to have a fast expansion globally. So we did this acquisition in Asia and still up and running. Very happy about
the. But the brand still does exist.
The brand still exists to this day. Yeah.
So it's not The Great Room by Industrious.
It is The Great Room by Industrious. Exactly. Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense in Asia where you have a lot of value concentration in small CBDs. Like a building in Singapore is like probably 4 or 5 times the value of a building in more than that, 10 times the value.
The value.
and it makes sense to have like very luxurious environment where you invest heavily in the design. And we're still hiring like the likes of the Mandarin Oriental, the Four Seasons designers for those concepts.
I can tell you, offices I worked in, they were not designed by anybody in connection with any Mandarin Oriental. Very sure about that.
I want to give credit to the Industrious design team here. I think they've done something even better than those industry, these inter designers that are rock stars, in understanding what people want to have in their work environment, in their daily experience. So you were asking me earlier about what's special about Industrious for our employees, but what's also special for our members. I think when we scale up, we can choose to just go crazy and grow with the flow and give a direct answer to what people want to consume and ask. And we've seen a lot of crazy bets in design when it comes to office, like having those very disproportionate game area, having those very quirky facilities that don't really make sense for 95% of the users. Yeah, there's been a lot of dogmatism about what is a beautiful office and not. What we've done is that we really talked to our members, whether it was the large multinational that needs to have a solution that's consistent in multiple markets, or the solopreneurs, the really consistent core of our community with the SMBs, small and medium-sized businesses. So we really collected a lot of feedback, like adjusted our product gradually and very wisely. And yeah, I think we've collected a lot of data that we've been able to work with and implement in the way we design our space. So
I'm very interested about how the new place will look like, especially since you're opening so many markets and we know that different markets work differently. Mm-hmm. What is the biggest difference in working from market to market? Because I imagine like the Americans, they work completely different than the Germans, but also this, I just saw it like in New York. The New York offices, they're like super, super tiny. While Chicago was already more spacious, and also like Berliners, they also have more space. Is it like another big difference, a cultural work difference?
That's a good question. And I honestly, I'm not going to pretend that I had the answer because that's what we're working on continuously to understand what is it that everybody wants to have in their work experience. And I think there is a universal aspect in the office experience because we are like miles and miles behind when it comes to innovating in the work environment. And there's been a lot of add-ons here, but mostly it was to make sure that the procurement team feels good, or the real estate team feel good, or the decision maker feels good with a very beautiful and impressive office. But there's not been a lot of real work done about how do we all feel in the work environment? How do we make sure that it pleases the majority of the white collar and knowledge economy workers? And I think we are really taking that pulse and trying to accommodate cultural nuances everywhere. But the key thing is, we think it's about quality more than quantity. Like if you look at the way commercial real estate has been working so far, is that if you want to provide a great work environment to your teams, you give a lot of square meters per employees. And that's been like...
New York didn't have that.
Yes, option.
It was like six employees on 4 square meters.
That was the assumption, that you need a lot of space per employee if you want to make it work. And you can't imagine how many hard, difficult discussions we've had with real estate decision makers where they were like, oh, no, you guys are really ridiculous. You are squeezing people in boxes where we need space. Like we have standards, and there's been this focus on space, which I think is the wrong.
I mean, when you have a look how American offices, because it's not that common in Europe, like the typical cubicles, what everybody had.
Yeah.
And now if you have a look on that, it already changed. But what do you think will be the future of an office?
It will be a much smaller workspace per se. You will be much less desk, way more chairs, way more diversity in like social areas and diversity in like meeting room and training rooms and conference room and events room, but that's for sure much less desk. I mean, if you want to be productive behind a screen and using a desk, a lot of people can do it very well at home or in any like pretty standard environments.
So you would say it's also like the split. So if you really want to like work in peace and quiet, you rather stay at home. If you're like ready to socialize and embrace community, then you're coming into the office.
Yeah, that's a shortcut, but that's more or less that. I think you can still need a quiet space when you go to the office. So you're going to commute, you're going to take a 30-minute train and walk for another 10 minutes. Like you want to make it count. So if you come to the office, you want to make sure that you can make it all. And we are designing a space with this idea of having the 30 seconds office, like 30 seconds away from your workstation or wherever you choose to sit for the day. You should be able to jump in a one-on-one call with another team member who's sitting in the other side of the country. You should be able to take a call with your partner because you forgot to buy something and you need to make sure that you'll pick it up on the way out. You need to be able to hold a big conference in a large meeting room. So you need this kind of agility in the space.
That's interesting.
Yeah, not a lot of space is offering that today. I think we've been really good at offering this practical space where people can just achieve way more, feel good, and at the same time connect. Yeah. And it doesn't mean that you need to be out there being the star of the office and speaking very loud. That's not what I'm suggesting. What I'm suggesting is that you need to be able to have a rich day. That is completely different from what you would achieve at home or in a cafe in your neighborhood where you are just focused on your screen. So
I remember how my old boss, when I was like, I was supposed to go to a conference room, and she literally drew me a map how to get there. And it took me like 15 minutes. So that was very far from 30 seconds.
That's really hard to do. We are like really having some headaches sometimes. And yeah, not so many properties are actually designed to be able to implement that that interior design. So yeah, we're having a lot of fun in that sense and not betting on transformational workspace, just making sure that we listen to our members and implement those changes efficiently.
What is the weirdest thing you ever saw in an office?
The weirdest thing? Wow, I think one thing I've been kind of shocked, impressed, but not in a nice way, has been on a takeover we've done in Hong Kong. There was the crypto golden days where there's not a lot of regulation in those markets. Singapore a bit less, but Hong Kong in particular, there's a lot of organizations moving to this market and having like crazy growth, hiring hundreds and hundreds of people per week. And contracting is the most expensive real estate in the world. So that was one of the most well-known tower in Hong Kong. I won't tell the name of this company, but they grew really fast. They crashed when the regulation came. They had to shut down everything, and we took over the offices. We transformed it. We redesigned it because that was a very sustainable and interesting way to give a second life to the office. But one thing in the office was actual shark tanks. Acting as partition. So between
I didn't expect that.
You had those aquarium, those tanks where there was like pretty big sharks. And when we took over, unfortunately, those poor beasts were just floating around, and that was one of the most shocking and yeah, sad things that I've seen in the works in the workspace. Yeah.
You really shook me.
Yeah. That's been that, and I don't want to say that it's an Asian style. It was a Western organization. It's clearly nothing about local practices. I think it was just a terrible idea and a very cruel one. Yeah, but yeah, office design can be fun in a lot of other ways. So
I learned actually, because most of the people are thinking like about design and architecture in real estate. It's like, oh, I'm painting that wall green and I'm painting that wall blue. But actually, you really can shape community with architecture. Like, how do you move? How do you, like, what do you do in that corner? Because the shape of the room is suggesting it. And I think until I really saw it and how it works, I didn't understand it. And that's super, super interesting.
That's a key question because we need to satisfy all stakeholders here. That's one of the other thing I didn't mention earlier, but we've been partnering with landlords overall in a different way. We told them that we would be happy to help in certain contexts, but we never pretended that we would give them a tenancy and we would be acting at a... So we've been very transparent about that. And we said, the day you will need someone else than retail, someone something different than F&B, and you want to try something new, we'll be there. We can be great coordinator for your asset to bring to life a community and connect this F&B operator, this hotel, this the other corporate tenants that you have in your big building. And I think we've been not confrontational with the landlords. We've been coming to them saying, we'll be ready when you want to try something different and you want someone to as a community manager for your building. And that's why it's the design is a very important piece, because we need to make sure that we optimize the square meter. So it's great to have this big space, very impressive, that everybody's going to be wild about. But at the end of the day, we need to make sure that there are spaces that work for our end users. That's clear priority. But they work equally for the asset owners, because if they don't see the returns that they need to have, we don't have a business case. And I think that's the balance that we managed to strike, making sure that we don't go for those crazy, huge, wow, feel-good amenities, but we go for amenities that people want to use regularly and are ready to pay for.
So I know some offices, they have actually beds for their employees.
A bed?
Bed, yeah.
Right. So
they can sleep in there. They have like pots where you can like actually rent yourself in and you can sleep in the office.
Wow.
Are you designing that as well?
Boundaries.
Some people don't have them.
Yeah.
So that's quite interesting. But what I also saw, there's a big American company, but also like in Europe and in Africa, they're doing gyms. And they also having co-working areas in their gym. So the people are coming, they're working out, and then they're like going to the office, what is also in the gym.
Yeah.
And they also have a laundry service. So some people are working until the laundry is done. So that's like a full circle and service moment.
Yeah.
I think there's always one upper. Mm-hmm. But I think also the beauty of it is all the skill is not to get too lost in the entire game.
Totally. You're right. And we've seen those private clubs opening all around the world, and they do everything. You have a karaoke room, you have hotel rooms indeed, you have laundry rooms, you have the gym, you have all sorts of resources, which are great. Don't get me wrong. I think they are amazing to have, but you need to make sure that people are ready to invest in those resources and are happy to finance those resources. And at the end of the day,
you need to pay for that.
Yeah. And we've seen a lot of markets where prestigious setup with very expensive amenities will be very well received. But people will just tell us, sorry, it's not something we can afford and it's not a priority in our business needs right now. Within an environment where, people can gather, build the company culture, have a good time, but we don't need to go for crazy crazy resources. So it's about knowing your priorities. And I guess, that's something we really are disciplined about, and we can still have a lot of fun and a lot of experiential benefits from that. So,
when you're having a look on your last 20 years of career, what is something what you would recommend or give like a young person as a recommendation or as a hint? Because your way wasn't that linear. Mm-hmm. You took opportunities and you trusted your gut feeling. And I'm pretty sure that young Ivan didn't think that he will be sitting here selling nests. So what is the golden rule from Ivan for the younger generation?
I guess I've been very intuitive and have to be honest. The gut feeling was always the kind of go-to ways, making sure that I'm prepared to make decisions, but at some point I just jump and don't look behind. So my key thing was maybe understanding what makes me happy early. And I understood very early, I mentioned when I joined this service office operator, that it was not about the real estate part. It was really about the experience that we can create in this old school industry, in real estate, commercial real estate. And I received a lot of good feedback early saying, oh, the way you connected our businesses has been such a game changer. We saved a lot of time and money finding this vendor. Or you just introduced someone who was so friendly to us that we became best friend, and I'm very grateful. And I took a lot of pride and satisfaction out of this process of building community, gathering people where they were not expecting it. So I think the first recommendation is to understand what you're good at and what people are telling you you're good at. And that was my first thing, and I really capitalized on that. So that's why I've decided to launch my own co-working in Singapore in 2015, because I was really in control of my skill sets and of my passion. So
I like two facts what you said. First of all, you said don't look back. And I think that's very important, because you can change it anyways.
And
sometimes you regret it, but you have to work with it. And another part of what I also liked is listen to people, what they tell you you're good at. Because sometimes you have the idea or the feeling that you're very good at something and you are not.
Yeah.
So I also, it's sad.
We all come to that conclusion, hard way or not, but
sometimes, yes. But I also like, especially for people who are in the reorientation phase, go to people and ask them, what do you think I'm good at? Or what do you see I'm good at? And that sometimes helps, because maybe you don't have it on your bingo card at all, what you're known for or what you're like very reliable for. So in a very good situation, maybe your expectation is matching, but I think there are also situations where it's not matching and maybe you need to recalibrate yourself then again.
I'm thankful, Christian, that you're not telling me, what are you talking about? You should go for your dream. Nothing's impossible. And I understand when people say that, and I have respect for that. But that's not been my strategy. I wanted to avoid.
So you didn't follow your dream?
The disillusion.
And what was your dream?
I think it was working into diplomatic, sort of diplomatic role. I wanted to avoid conflicts and be a peacemaker. So my dream was in my initial career path in diplomatic.
Ivan, the office diplomat.
Yeah. Thank you. I like that. And I guess it's the second recommendation, like try to avoid conflict as much as possible by bringing optimism and good energy in what you do. I think corporate life can be quite depressing to a certain level.
When you're sitting in an industrious.
Exactly. And bringing this energy and being respectful is another thing. When you're, as a young manager in particular, and maybe it's because we were this first generation, we were managing a lot of older workforce. Like it was probably one of the first generation that has such an age gap in the office culture. And so I was confronting very often to people who were like 20, 30 years more experienced than me.
Story of my life.
And I understood very early, and I really still go with this, that respect was everything. You never know what's going to make people react emotionally and gonna hurt people. So taking everybody very seriously is one of my go-to strategy. I really think that people always have something that you can't really speculate about, and you can't. So being extremely respectful and taking people seriously is something I do, like really in everyday work life. And in contradiction with that is not taking myself too seriously, because I would be extremely sad if that was the case.
Life is too short.
So that's another, that's another thing that's been really working for me, being extremely considerate of others, taking them seriously, but never myself. Yeah.
So if people hear that and they think, I'm inspired by Ivan, I'm inspired by the journey of Industrious, are you hiring right now? Is there a chance to join your journey?
Yes. Yes. That's a big yes.
I think you need to come a little bit more closer.
Let me tell you a little bit more actually about our plan. So obviously we are on three continents. We are on very mature level in the US, and we also open Canada, but we have those operations I mentioned through the acquisition of the Great Room in Asia Pacific. And I guess the most strategic area for us is Europe. That's where we have a lot of great ambitions, and we're really excited about those various opportunities in those different national markets somehow. Where
it's going to be wild, I can tell you already now.
Work culture is different. I think Europeans are also among the most sophisticated work animals when it comes to their work preferences. And we've seen that very early in our data. Like that's the place where sharing desk having an agile workforce has been in place for quite some time. Even before the pandemic, that was already the case in markets. And maybe as a consequence, there is no established CBDs, like central business district in most of European capital cities, like there is in the US or in Asian markets. There are nuances with multiple cultures in every single country. So that's make it a real challenge to deliver the work experience that people want to have. So that's an exciting project. And we're going right now, of course, with growth in London. In the UK overall, we probably will open more units in Manchester and also in Dublin. But in the rest of Europe, in continental Europe, we will go to Amsterdam very soon. We'll probably go to other cities in the Netherlands. They are proving to be extremely progressive in the way people want to work, and there is a strong demand for a more agile and experiential work experience. So we're really excited about the Dutch market.
But do you have like always local people, obviously always on the ground?
Yeah.
And then you have like a headquarter team virtually kind of?
Yeah, we have a lot of corporate functions in London right now, but everywhere across Europe, we have Italian designer, we have very, very diverse profiles in the team, and we are actually doing what we preach. So we have a distributed workforce, like people are working across Europe, and we don't have restrictions about where we're going to be at quarter. But Germany is probably the biggest market for us right now and for the next couple of years, because it's one of these unique markets where you have multiple cities with depth in terms of market share and potential of growth. In France, you have Paris, and that's a great market. We'll go there. In the UK, you have London, of course. And in Spain, you have maybe two key markets with Madrid and Barcelona. But in Germany, you get Berlin, you get Munich, you get Frankfurt, you get Düsseldorf, Hamburg. All those markets have a lot of, just
appetite. You really got to spend a lot of time in Germany.
You really got to spend a lot of time in Germany. And we really like the fact that people know about Flex. They understand the benefits of the solution. But it's been just the beginning of it. Like, I think Berlin is the lowest penetration rate for Flex in Europe.
Only
1.8% of offices are Flex offices in Berlin. To give you an idea, it's
the amount of co-working spaces went six times bigger now than in 2019.
It still remains a very, very small market share on the corporate real estate landscape. That means that you have a lot of players, a lot of small players, and that's great. We need, like, it's like in hotel segmentation, you need a lot of boutique hotel, you need the large chain, you have a lot of different needs in this industry as it consolidates. But Berlin, and people are surprised about this this number, is really at the very beginning, and I guess it's a great opportunity because people really understand the product. They really like it. They want to have a better and richer work experience, but they've really barely started to use Flex services. Like,
I was about to rent my own office, but maybe I need to reconsider now.
You should.
Ivan, we're coming to an end. It was my pleasure. A lot of nice insights. My personal full circle moment back at Industrious. The first day in Industrious, I never thought that I'm going to interview you at some point. So that's very nice for me. I'm very much looking forward to your journey in Germany. And let's see how you're going to shape the market. We love some progress. Thank you so much for being our guest at Wechselwillig. Now you need to try to pronounce it.
Oh, let me read my notes and the phonetic ones. So,
Wechsel.
Thank you, Christian Halbert, for inviting me at Wechsel Podcast.
almost, but I give you the credits for trying. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Christian. It was great pleasure.
Das hat euch aber noch nicht ganz gereicht und ihr habt Bock, die Unternehmen einmal persönlich kennenzulernen, dann können wir euch nur den Karrieretag in Deutschland empfehlen, wovon es mittlerweile 40 Karrieretage in 24 Städten gibt. Und ihr könnt euch direkt unter karrieretag.org anmelden, kostenlos. Vor Ort gibt es dann sogar noch kostenlose Coachings, CV-Checks oder auch Bewerbungsfotoshootings. Schaut einfach mal rein, guckt, welche Unternehmen dabei sind, die ihr interessant findet, schnappt eure Unterlagen oder auch nur eure Gedanken und zieht los. Wir werden auch auf der einen oder anderen Veranstaltung dabei sein, also falls ihr uns auch nochmal persönlich kennenlernen wollt oder vielleicht den einen oder anderen Trick und Tipps bekommen wollt, meldet euch gerne direkt an. Wir freuen uns auf euch.